This is a 1971 internet. This is 2 years after that Steve Crocker, RFC number one. The first messages got exchanged, a year or two before that. So by this time, the internet is up to, about 15 or 20 hosts. We were one of them. Here we are, Harvard IMP. The Harvard IMP was pretty much right where we're standing now. It was in a machine room which was physically located right here. It was a PDP-10 computer. It was also a PDP-1 computer, which was located over in Pierce Hall. And Carnegie Mellon was on it, Case Western Reserve, MIT Lincoln Labs, MIT itself, University of Illinois, University of Utah, SRI, which is at Stanford, UC Santa Barbara, Stanford University, UCLA, RAND Corporation out in Santa Monica, SDC, BBN at Bolt, Rannick & Newman, which was actually one of the major contractors. That's a company that's located just in North Cambridge here, and is still going strong. So that's the original internet. And so there were all of these IMPs, and they were connected to each other by leased telephone lines, and there were hosts hanging off of them. Right, that's the way it started. And so here's the thing I was talking about. We now kind of think very often when we're using the internet that there's a bunch of hosts and a bunch of clients, a bunch of servers and a bunch of clients, and they have these, the way you tell them apart is that they have these, URL addresses. But, and we think of we're sort of downloading stuff and uploading stuff, right? Downloading is getting from the big machine to the little machine, and uploading is going from the little machine to the big machine. But the whole metaphor is actually wrong, right? There's really just the internet to which all of these machines are connected on an equal standing, although the connections may be of varying speeds and so on. And the internet routes the messages from one to another. And the things that are replacing the IMPs in the modern internet are these routers. And the crucial decision, which was not an uncontroversial decision in the late 60s, when the government put out its, through the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, put out its call for proposals for somebody to start constructing an internetworking set of protocols, was whether you should have a circuit-switched network or a packet-switched network. Nobody had ever built a packet-switched network, really, so this was a whole new thing. So a circuit-switched network would be one, like the way we think of a telephone system is working. In fact, the telephone system it's all just reduced to bits now, where you get the two ends of the communication talking to each other, and they kind of have exclusive use of a, electrically connected circuit.
Like a tube, right.
As opposed to this breaking stuff up at the edges where your computers are into little packets, putting the packets into the internet, having them move around and eventually reach their destination in fragmentary form, having the packets reassembled into whatever email, video, other document that you want, and not even necessarily having the multiple packets that compose a single message travel through the internet by the same route. Okay, so this is the sort of basic idea behind a packet switch network, and the junction points in the packet switch networks are these routers where you have packets coming in and packets going out, and the job of the router is to take an incoming packet and decide by looking at the address on it, because they've got destination addresses on them, just as we saw in the original thing there, which of the, you know, small number of outgoing connections the packet should be sent out on. How many bits did RFC number one say were for the destination address? Anybody remember that as we went by?
Five.
So how many? What was the maximum number of computers that the original internet design as specified in RFC number one could support? 32. Right, 32. Maybe only 31, because I'll bet they saved zero for something else. But anyway, 32 would be the maximum. So that was the first of some under design. Okay, so the routers receive the packets, and they have to store them temporarily, because they have to read the destination address and send the packets on their way. And there may be lots of packets converging on the router at one time. So it's got a what we call a buffer. It's got a temporary storing place. There's only so much memory. You know, the way these routers used to be made, that wasn't very much memory because memory was very expensive, certainly the way they were built in the 70s. Now, of course, there's memory's cheap, so they can store a lot more, they can buffer a lot more packets. But you know, one of these routers is a machine. It's only got so much, it's only so big physically, it's only got so much memory capacity. So one of the basic design decisions, which is different from the kind of problems you would have to face if you had a circuit switch network, is that these buffers can get full and the computer, this, you know, routing computer, can get overwhelmed. Every just so happens, you know, all of these packets happen to converge on this machine all at once. And then it's absolutely fundamental design decision that, you know, you just have to throw a packet away every now and then if there's no place to put it and you can't keep up with the flow of packets arriving. So this delivery system is fundamentally it's got this huge, you know, important failure mode. You know, you can send your packets through the internet, but they can get thrown away at any point along the way, depending on random circumstances. Of course, there are all kinds of other circumstances as well. You know, Hurricane Katrina can hit, and the city of New Orleans can be underwater, and any packets that were meant to go from, you know, Houston to Florida that happened to go through, be routed through New Orleans wouldn't be able to be delivered by those routers either. So the internet somehow got to be resilient. That's a fundamental design decision. Okay, so you can throw the packets away if the buffer is full.